You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Just like, how do you feel?
Music, terrified, uncomfortable. What was that? I was trying to pick it out. I couldn't figure it out.
Alex.
Some kind of Indiana Jones or something.
Alex. It's the goddamn, movie.
The bottom third of an open bottle of wine.
Listen to me. Okay. It's COVID time.
It is COVID time. That's why I've got my tea here.
Got your guy.
A nice lemon ginger tea here.
Alex, it was
with a backup.
It was Die Hard. The theme song. The theme song that we just.
Of course it was.
Everybody, welcome to Little Justice.
That makes sense.
The holiday special. I'm Nick Walker.
Who are you? Amazing. I'm Alex.
Listen, so we you know, Britt, our amazing producer, put out this idea that we should come on and do like a holiday thing. And it was funny because we were like, I mean, we want to, but also like, we're not like, don't talk to us on the holidays. Like, we're terrible people for this. Do you know what I mean? Like, it was just not a good decision. But the one intersection that we knew that we could do was like a diehard centric thing. The first thing Alex, when we're in the private chat before we come on online, the first thing Alex says is, oh shit, were we supposed to watch Die Hard? That's the first thing he says.
Who prepares for these things?
No, there's no prep here. There's no prep here. But we are so happy to be talking to you for the holidays. On the Broadway Podcast Network. Good Lord.
There you go.
I'm throwing my words already. Also happy to talk to you because if you listen to our episode this morning, you know that Alex has the COVID. Still has
out the other end of it, but now with like a cold or something, if I'm a little congested, if I sound nasally, that's why. It hasn't been a fun couple of weeks, gonna be honest. So very excited that the holiday season is here.
Yeah.
And now it's just next stop is Christmas, baby.
Next stop is
Christmas.
You know, let's get into that. That's a whole thing. But no, we wanted to do this holiday special to talk about Die Hard, talk about holiday movies in general, and just kind of hang out with each other. You know, I'm on the East Coast right now. Alex is on the West. You know, but it's the holidays, so you got to be together with your family. And speaking of family, our two guests today, you know, we have a well, Justice, we're very lucky to have a cadre of artists and actors to
good word.
To choose from, but these two women are definitely guests who, like, we had an episode with them, and then we recorded it.
It took us a good 3 or 4 months for you to figure out technically how to make audio work. So we lost that episode in the fray, but we'll do it again. In the meantime,
we have this because these women are perhaps the most important women in the world, certainly in our lives. Our wives. It's like Sarah and Emine, come on in.
Look who it is!
Oh, look who it is.
Aww. Hello.
Family time.
Lady, how are you doing today?
Oh, I'm dandy. Doing dandy. It's getting a little crisp in San Diego, so I whipped out the long warming threads. A little warmer than New York, but just... I'm happy to be a little cozy finally. Just a little bit cozy.
Crisp, like 65, 70 degrees.
Yeah, like a good, cool, crisp 65, like 70. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, it's just not so crisp and cozy. Just,
throw a vest over a t-shirt. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, put on a little knit.
Right. You do look very fall appropriate. Very, very fall centered.
I just need a pile of leaves, and I will be happy. I will be happy.
And we will find one for you. That by the end of this show, we'll have a pile of leaves. Someone will bring them in. We have that kind of budget here.
I am holding you to that.
Yeah, we will. Emine, how are you now? Emine, you as well have some experience with COVID-19. You have it or had it or still have it. So how we were talking a little bit before we got on the air, but how are you feeling? Like, how is that going for you?
I feel great. I was the first one who got it. Alex tested negative and I tested positive. So
it's funny because she's like the most careful person ever. Like we can't get groceries without scrubbing every single apple and bag of coffee, and like everything gets the treatment. No shoes anywhere kind of stuff. And then, of course, she's the first one to get it.
Now, but that was, I will say, that was, that is the experience in our home as well when this first started. Because we were, you know, everyone, we were learning about it. But Sarah was very diligent about, you know, she had gloves at the ready. Like, but like, we were wiping down everything. There was a system, Sarah.
All the PPE. And as time has gone on, I continue to wipe down every grocery I have? I do not. I wash my hands diligently. I sanitize diligently, but it is mostly airborne, and that is what I focus on.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
There was a minute. There was So our producer has pointed out that I'm having a quick dinner. That? So here's the thing. This is I brought this on because Sarah's favorite cookie place, which is Chip Cookies, and it's my birthday tomorrow, so I'm starting.
Really?
It is, in fact. I'm starting on this early. I'm starting on this birthday thing early, because it's just going to be me alone in this house. So it's like I can literally start celebrating whenever I want. So hence the wine, hence the cookies.
Happy birthday, I guess.
Yeah, no, thank you. Happy.
Happy birthday. Whatever.
Happy early birthday.
No, thanks. Thank you, guys. Britt is chiming in saying that Chip Cookies is her favorite place. It's an amazing place. I Sarah introduced this to me. I go back and forth because I'm a Schmackeries man.
I've never even heard of that.
You've never heard of Schmackeries?
No, the more you say it, the more I haven't heard of it.
Schmackeries. I think it really does depend on just what mood you're in, what type of cookie you're in the mood for. Chip is like a scone type chocolate chip cookie, you know? Okay. And then Chip crispier. Is...
Yeah.
You know, and then Schmackeries is more of like your traditional cookie, large, nice, warm, gooey, soft center. It's truly is a magical cookie.
What's it called again?
Chip.
Ouch.
Well,
I think you meant the other one.
Schmackery.
We really got to make that make it pop.
It makes me think. It makes me think of that thing that's peanut butter and jelly in the same jar. For some reason, you ever had that?
I know what you're talking about.
Oh my god, I had it one time. It's like you're too lazy to go separate jars for the thing, so it's like a swirl of peanut butter and Schmuckers. Yeah, that's probably why. Yeah, gross.
I need them separate.
Yeah, that's separate.
I think most sane people do need them separate. You know, I think that the idea.
Yeah, some people are busy. Some people don't have time for that.
If you're too busy to put both PB and PBA on your sandwich, I don't want to know what. Like, what do
well,
you?
Well, this is coming from Nick, who actually doesn't mind those pre-packaged, like crusts cut off, peanut butter and jelly sandwiches that like you get in a vending machine.
Uncrustables.
Yes, Uncrustables.
Let's get into
talking shit on this swirl, but you'll eat on Uncrustable.
It's the same thing
with bread involved too.
First of all, goddamn name right. It's called Crustables. They're called Crustables.
Uncrustable. But is there crust on it though? I thought it was no crust.
Nope,
that's why.
No crust. That's why they're called Crustables. Just crust. You know what I mean? The crust is gone. You were able to exist post crust.
Got it. Doesn't make sense.
Shut up. And Crustables are incredible. So this is a good segue because one of the things I want to talk about is, a holiday tradition. Britt, would you mind bringing up pick 14, please?
You got it set up here.
A place that we can't be at.
Right? God.
So when we go, this is, of course, Haunted Mansion. Haunted Mansion during the Christmas season. At Disneyland is specifically, but when Sarah and I go to the Disney parks, when we stay on Disney property, I will go to the little dining halls in the resorts, and oftentimes they will have snacks, and one of the snacks they have for the children is Crustables.
For
the children. I don't care. Mm-hmm. I will 100% go and grab at least five of them in a go and just have them. Do you know what I mean, Sarah? Like,
you'll just stock up on Crustables.
Yep.
And eat them.
Mm-hmm. They're truly for a child's palate.
There are not enough bathrooms in the park to binge Crustables while you're there.
It's so good though.
The thought of a PB&J in bread sitting in a wrapper for like weeks, months on end in like a box getting shipped around and then you eat it.
Listen.
That it freaks me out.
It is.
It makes me very uncomfortable as well. And I have to watch him eat it. I have to watch him put on his little sandals, go to the little cafeteria area, grab like 12 or make a few trips and stock up and put them all in the fridge. So like he doesn't get like recognized from just getting these little PB&J prepackaged things too much. It's a whole thing, fam.
It's a whole thing. M&A, when we go to the Disney parks next, I will share my Crustables with you. And you can thusly spread the gospel of Crustables to our two friends here.
Sounds great. You know, thank you.
Yeah, obviously. No, thank you. Thank you. Obviously, they don't understand, and that's fine.
No, I do feel this way about Hot Pockets, though.
Do you?
That's a different story. I'll eat Hot Pocket any day. It's like a pepperoni pizza Hot Pocket.
I can get behind that when it's a full pocket. I don't like. Yeah. Sometimes they jip you on the. They jip you.
Oh yeah, it's like not full enough.
It's not a full enough pocket. Sometimes you eat those things, you don't feel like you're getting the full. Full deal.
What a bad feeling. How did we end up here?
I don't know. Sarah, what was that?
Hot pockets are dangerous. I've never not had a hot pocket. I've never not bitten into a hot pocket and had it just burn my mouth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Danger. Yeah.
The balance is bad there.
It is. It's a bad balance. But you know,
speaking of balance danger.
Speaking of balance danger. you know, Die Hard and the holidays. No, but it's a holiday, so it is time to, you know, we're thinking about all the food, like, especially around my, you know, for my birthday, I'm thinking about all the foods I like, you know, the cookies, the wine, the things that I want. Obviously, I would love to be with Sarah and with this crew right now. That would be really lovely.
Nice, right? Did you guys do Thanksgiving on your own?
Yeah, I Zoomed with Nick and his family in the morning, and then I usually cook Thanksgiving dinner for my family. So this year, my two sisters hung out in the same place, and then I Zoomed, you know, I Zoomed in, and I walked my sister step by step through how to make the turkey or the chicken. I don't do a turkey. I just do a large chicken. I walked her through step by step on how I make the chicken, and it was lovely. It all worked out. We had a meal together. We cooked together.
Oh, nice.
And we watched The Addams Family Values, one of the best Thanksgiving movies, together via Zoom.
Of course. That's amazing. That's amazing.
Of course. And according to Nick, best holiday movie.
And I will say, I gave that credit to Sarah. And I did that on the pod as well. That Sarah absolutely put that movie in my path and in my, you know, would I be talking about that movie if Sarah had not put that up for, you know?
No, of course not. It'd been so long since I've seen it. I was cutting the audio into the episodes. I just ended up watching like half the movie because it's so
great.
Good.
It's a great film.
It's so funny. It's such a good sequel, a rare good sequel, and it's just hilarious. Joan Cusack is an absolute revel. Like
thing.
She's just a revelation in that movie.
She's amazing. She's amazing. Yeah, Joan Cusack, Raul Julia, everyone.
Oh
in
God,
that.
Yeah, he's great.
Killing it up the top. But
the quintessential Christmas movie, right? Now we're not talking a holiday movie. Now we're talking.
So this is where this gets this is where this gets tricky, right? Because holiday movie, Christmas movie. You know, obviously we all know there's a war on Christmas. You know, there's a war. It's been raging for years and years and years. You know,
is there?
I'm completely joking. There's no such war on Christmas. It doesn't actually fucking exist. Anybody who's
go to Starbucks to see what he's talking about.
You know, but it's ridiculous. I do, you know, I it's interesting because we, you know, we pitch this as a debate about whether or not Die Hard is a Christmas movie. Is there anybody who's on this call right now who truly doesn't feel that it's a Christmas? I think we are all in agreement.
I mean, it takes place on Christmas. Is it on Christmas Eve or Christmas Day?
I think it's Christmas Eve.
I think
it's Christmas Eve. He flies in Christmas Eve, and she's like, "Why don't you spend tomorrow with us?" You know, and there is Christmas music, Christmas lights. It is a specifically Christmas party.
Well, yeah,
so I think it's a Christmas.
If we don't mind, I'd love to actually take a look at that opening to get us started. Can we? Can we go to clip number one?
Please.
You don't like flying, do you?
Gives you that idea.
You want to know the secret to surviving air travel? After you get where you're going, take off your shoes and your socks. Then you walk around on the rug barefoot and make fists with your toes.
Fists with your toes?
I know. It sounds crazy. Trust me. I've been doing it for 9 years. Yes, sir. Better than a shower and a hot cup of coffee.
Okay.
It's okay, I'm a cop. Trust me, I've been doing this for 11 years.
Half of the captain and crew would like to welcome you to Los Angeles. Have a very Merry Christmas.
Die Hard!
This opening.
Die Hard.
It's one of those openings where you learn so much about the character, right? We know exactly who this hero is within a minute of the movie.
Right.
Like we know without him telling, without any overt anything, we know that he's, you know, we see that he has a teddy bear, so we assume he's going to meet someone, probably a child. we know that he's a cop. We know that he's afraid of flying. Like, the first thing they give us is a flawed character. We're in.
And we know that he has a problematic relationship.
The way
that he has that second with that hostess.
Yeah, that is a really interesting moment where it's like
well, it is. Yeah, I mean, my thing as we were watching it last night, like, they never really define what the problem with the marriage is. Like, it's like the most troubled relationship ever, because like he's coming out to spend Christmas with his wife, but also they're separated and living different lives, but also she wants him to stay over, but also she's kind of flirty with the coworker. Like, they never really define where they're at or what's going on.
I think what happened, the information they gave is that he's a New York cop. She got a really amazing job.
Right.
She moved the family to LA. He refused to go with her and work for the LAPD. And now they're just in this constant struggle because he's fine with his wife and kids being somewhere else, but he's a New York cop. He can't shake it. He can't shake that beat. He can't do it. And also, I do think that moment of him and the flight attendant was inserted because Bruce Willis, it was the studio didn't want to cast him because he wasn't a strong enough sex symbol. So I feel as if they inserted that. Kind of to give us a certain perspective.
I've heard
the leading
that
man.
Yeah, that's interesting, Sarah. I've heard that they wanted to have Arnold Schwarzenegger. Is that how you pronounce English?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So they wanted to have him, and then he didn't accept it because he didn't find it as fancy, or he was doing some another show or movie at the time. I don't remember. And then Bruce Willis was kind of like, he was really willing to take this opportunity to like from TV to movie like industry or something. I've read something like that about it. I don't know if
it was. This was like his breakout role, right?
Yeah, because he was knee deep in Moonlighting and he was really trying to transition. Yeah.
And they paid him like for the time what was like an exorbitant amount of money. I think it was like $5 million, which at the time was like for a TV star to kind of. But Sarah, I love your point about, you know, he's a New York cop, you know, who's trying to adjust to LA life, because it is right, and especially at Christmas time, LA Christmas is a very different thing than New York Christmas. You know, New York Christmas is weird. It's Britt, can we pick 11, please?
Okay.
It's a weird.
All right.
Sarah loves New York Christmas.
All right.
That's the creepiest gingerbread man I've ever seen in my life. That's
it is. You can tell how uncomfortable I am. Now let's get into. Can we just break this down for a quick second? Listen.
Break it down.
I despise Santa Claus. With every fiber of my being. If you are a New Yorker, you know exactly what SantaCon is. It's when all the young business professionals come out dressed up in their Santa outfits and their holly, and they go and they kind of just go on bar crawls and they rage. The subway systems are an absolute mess, filled with pandemonium, and it's worse than Halloween. So my friends who love SantaCon dragged me out, and the entire time, that was the look on my face. Just like,
yeah. I need to see it one more time. We need to
put that up.
Yeah,
there it is.
Beautiful.
I hated every moment of that day.
I like how you're trying with the holly in your hair, though. Like, you're trying to be festive.
Yeah, like, I put in some sort of effort. Let me just put this in my hair. I wore a green dress.
Yeah.
Mm. But see that I would say that holiday was still, you know, you made it through. There was other holidays where neither of us made it through. Can we put up pick one, please? This holiday.
How very dare you?
This holiday was an interesting time. Sarah, do we want to, without naming names, do we want to talk about what happened at that holiday?
No, we can talk freely. I will not name names, but like we can talk freely about this.
We can absolutely talk freely, 100%. We won't say because okay. So for those of you listening from the Broadway community, there are Broadway people involved in this story. So we will not say whose house we went to. We will say that it was the house of someone who loves to cook. That's really all you need to know. So Sarah, please.
All right, fam. So friend who lives in a beautiful part of Brooklyn had a, this was Thanksgiving, right?
It was Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm.
This was a Thanksgiving get together. You know, Nick and I, his aunt and uncle sold us a car right after we got married. So we are blessed enough to have a car living in New York City. So we drove like 20 minutes to this shindig in Brooklyn. Got there, we were chit-chatting, the vibes were grand, having a marvelous time. And then said host, who loves to cook, you know, came up to us and was just like, hey guys, I got some really great pop brownies from my buddy. Do you want to try some? And we were just like, yeah. And I was like, well, I'm driving and, you know, let me just be careful because I'm not trying to drink too much alcohol or anything like that. So, you know, what do you recommend? Like, he's like, I tried some before. Like, I've gotten some from this person a million times. Like, it's going to be great. So if you're driving, just take this large of a cookie and like you'll like a brownie or whatever, you'll be fine. So I took that advice. I think Nick took that advice as well, because you know, we weren't trying to get too turt. You know, people's parents were there. Like it was a whole
Yeah, that's
thing.
Such a risky move at a party.
Super risky, guys.
We took his word for it because he was like, no, it's fine. You won't forget. It's really chill. Like it'll be great. So we all took I think it was a cookie. We split this cookie into small bits. The smallest of bits. Now, I'd say half the party took small bits of a cookie and the other half did not. Fast forward 30 minutes to an hour, the apartment was split in two. Half of the party were the people who had some cookies. They were in the kitchen watching, like we were there watching the host kind of cook, and we were just like
like it was bad, guys.
Oh my god. And then like the other half of the party was in the living room being like, are they all right? His friend was pacing, literally walking around like this, like
terrifying
pacing. I have never been that messed up. I could not drive home. You know, our beloved Nick never got a license to drive.
No,
so
he did not.
I could not drive home. I had to make eyes with him from across the room when like two people who didn't have cookies were talking on either side of me. And I was literally freaking out. I was like, what am I doing here? Whoa! And I made eye contact with him and I was just like, I cannot drive home. And I have a vague memory. I have a vague memory of Nick throwing us in an Uber, and then me getting sick when we got home.
Accurate. All of this is true, and you have to understand. Like, it wasn't just right. It wasn't just being hot. It was like I was drooling. I'm pretty sure you were drooling. Like, you might have been drooling as well. Like,
I think we were all drooling. There was drool like, everywhere.
It was bad, guys. It was not. Something was off.
If you're not used to that is scary.
We couldn't taste the food because our sinuses became overwhelmed with ingested THC. Like, that's how bad it was. So, grade A food, couldn't taste it.
Yeah, yeah. Things got really rough. Things got really
rough. I'm so grateful to be alive. I'm so grateful.
What a grand time. What a grand thing.
What a great
time to be alive. It's John McClane. But all this to say, right, New York holidays, very specific thing. John McClane, yeah. You know, shows up to this building and is getting the sense of L.A. holidays, which is, you know, as you guys, you know, Alex and Emily, you guys have lived in L.A. for quite some time. How are the holidays in L.A.? Like, what's that like?
We've been going to an East Coast party.
Yeah, we just end up on the East Coast. Usually every year that's where we go. Yeah. Cause it's not, I mean, there's the normal, like in the stores and stuff, you know, they Christmas it up and like the promenade and the Grove, like they become Christmassy, but New York, cause you walk everywhere and it's cold, like it becomes Christmassy everywhere, right? You walk outside and you just get the feel of that time of year. Here, it looks the same as it ever looks.
It feels fake in here. Fake snow everywhere.
Like New York is kind of about the magic of the holiday. I think LA is more about the party of the holiday. You know, it's like you run through the celebration, you move through the motions, but it doesn't feel especially Christmassy.
Yeah. It's definitely a different type thing.
Yeah.
I want to say hi to everybody who's in the chat. I see Diana, I see Maureen, I see Rob. Thank you guys for being here. You guys are the best. Sarah, Diana is saying it is so good to see you, and she loves how you tell a story.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you so much, dear Diana.
Yes. Go ahead.
Can I also just say, I feel as if they do a really, really good job of showing, just not even through words, just through images, the kind of differences to like an East Coast holiday and a West Coast holiday. You see the fashions of that woman head to toe in very, very tight white spandex at the airport. Apparently that's supposed to be winter wear, and she like runs to her boyfriend. And I think that's when John McClane
makes that comment. California.
California.
No. He gets a very interesting introduction to LA from our friend Ellis. Can we play clip two, please? I believe it's clip two. I think it's clip two. Let's see. It might be wrong.
Ellis. I was just making
a look at him.
He's certainly LA. That's the most LA thing.
Just coming in.
It happens a couple of times too at this party, people coming into rooms they shouldn't be in, and there's something crazy going on.
Oh my god.
I love the way he plays it too, just like moving back and forth and like wiping his nose. There are so many people like that in LA.
Look at him.
You throw quite a party. I didn't realize they celebrated Christmas in Japan.
I don't know how I feel about that line. I don't know how I didn't know they celebrate Christmas. Like, I don't know. It just feels like it hasn't aged well. I don't know.
Sort of a double celebration. We closed a pretty big deal today, and a lot of it was due to Holly. Am I right, JoJo?
Oh.
And the wife.
Not the wife. Holly Gennaro, sir. Let's call it what she is. Go ahead, Sarah.
The most magical 80s hairdo.
Yes.
Oof.
Oh, yeah.
Look at that. She is serving 80s woman in charge running things. Perm. Mm-hmm. Oof.
Yep.
Love it.
Yep. No, it's the truth. I love Holly, you know, and Sarah, you've talked about this often. I love how Holly is portrayed, because it very much, I think, was against so much of the kind of the wife type of the 80s, right? It's very much this woman who's like, look, I'm doing my life out here. I would love you to be a part of it, but like, I'm also not going to stop my life for you. Like, I'm moving.
And I think it's so cool, because there was that archetype that was developing in the 80s of, like, you know, the businesswoman with the suit at creating a triangle.
The shoulders, the big shoulders.
Wearing sneakers to work and work, very working girl-esque. And that was really taking over. That was really, like, people were making a lot of money in films of that archetype. So now we have this, it's later in the 80s with Die Hard, we have this amazing, amazing female lead, Holly Gennaro, who's like, you can't really think of any other woman who would be able to be married to John McClane. And she is just as badass, does not take any of his nonsense.
Yeah.
I just love her. And also, she stands up to the bad guys so beautifully. Oh, gosh, she's just so sassy. I just love her.
So sassy. No, she's
so sassy.
He has some great allies in both her and can we put up pick four, please, for my other favorite ally, pick four.
Yeah.
Oh yes.
Of course.
Carl Winslow.
Reginald Val Johnson.
It's such a good character, like the immediate bond that him and John share through the whole thing. Like it
It's quite wonderful. And again, these are Christmas themes, right? Friendship, marriage, love, family.
What's funny is, like, John McClane is a character to whom none of this should make sense, and kind of doesn't. Like, no aspect of his life agrees with who he is. Like, and it's a theme throughout all the diehards that they have, right? His relationship with his kids in the future, like everything that he comes in contact with, he refuses to like grow outside of himself. Yet still remains this kind of charming, like, whatever. Yeah.
He always has that edge. And I love how they even, when you were talking earlier, Nick, about like how they reveal so much in the opening of the film, but do it in such a beautiful, subtle way, because you understand all of the things he's going through, like what Emine said earlier, but you also know that he is just a cool, relaxed, edgy, mysterious, very just like New York, like skeptical guy. And yeah. I feel as if that never leaves him. And just like his downfall, and also what makes him so special, is just being that NYPD cop. And he never gets rid of that at the expense of his family, his marriage, you know.
Yeah. No, completely.
Carl Winslow doesn't come back after the second one.
No, he does not. Does Holly come back for the second one? I don't remember.
She's mentioned, but like she's not in any other film.
Yeah.
I kind of always jump from Die Hard to Vengeance.
The three.
You should. Yeah. Very wise. Yeah. Very wise. Yeah.
Sarah, what is our cat doing? I'm just so cute.
Where is he?
I see him in the corner.
He's giving himself a wee bath.
Aw. Give himself a wee bath there. Yeah,
you got to stay fresh and clean during the holidays.
Got to stay fresh and clean. Rob points out that her voice is on the phone in three. There we go.
There you go.
Yeah, there's the conversation.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
And then in the fourth, I'm not sure, because they pull up her file in the fourth, you see her file digitally. I'm not sure if she's listed as deceased or if they're still just separated. I blocked that movie and the rest of the other ones after three hours.
Aren't they divorced after a while? Like, is it because in four, it's his relationship with his daughter? I feel like him and his wife are very divorced at that point.
Yeah, for sure.
Sarah, remind me, we walked out of five, correct? That was when we got out. Yeah.
Yes, we did. We saw it on Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
And I, like, an hour in, I was just like, I can't. This is destroying my childhood.
Yeah.
And I can't do this.
Is that the Justin Long one or the one that
No, that was four.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the one.
That one's not as bad.
No, I wish it was rated R, because he couldn't say yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker, because they had a PG-13 rating. And if you go back and watch the movie, you see a lot of curse words very poorly dubbed.
Yeah.
Very poorly dubbed.
Supremely. But no, I think number one and number three, but really number one, I think gets the character just right. Like you understand him, you understand, you're charmed by him. He's a fish out of water in this very aesthetic value LA landscape. I always feel bad for Joseph Takagi, because he seems like a great boss.
Oh yeah.
Great boss. I hate that he just gets blown away. You know, like, I just hate that.
Everything in the script, it's so well constructed, right? To move one thing to the next thing. Like, if you didn't like him and he got killed, then the weight of it would not be what it is, right? The stakes wouldn't immediately go up. Like, okay, these guys will kill anybody.
Yeah.
Like, if they don't get what they want, they'd be business. Like, if he had kind of deserved it, like the other guy does, I don't think it would have played the same way. You don't like to watch it happen, but it makes it.
Yeah, I so agree.
Yeah, no, it's so true. It's so true. So,
yeah, I think that's such a good point. And like in the beginning.
Oh.
I'm sorry, husband. Were you speaking?
No. Please go. Did I talk over you, husband? No, you did not. I'm not saying.
I'm sorry. Oh my God. Typical wife, just like talking over her husband all the time. What are you
talking about? Goodness gracious. Are you kidding me?
Something that I was just going to say was piggybacking. Can we have some privacy, please? Listen, I'm so sorry.
Can we?
I think I heard you say. Anyway.
Tell you. Love it. Continue. I'm so sorry.
I was just gonna dovetail off of what you said earlier about how awesome Takagi is. There is that awkward comment that John McClane makes, and then Takagi just is so charming and flips it into a joke. You just see what a cool, collected, very personable, skilled boss he is. Like, he goes, he says to Ellis, he's like, this is Holly's husband, Holly's policeman. And I think that really, at least for me, that gets the audience on his side so quickly.
That made me kind of think, though, like, I feel like they kind of inferred that her and the skeezy cokehead dude had maybe hooked up at some point.
I don't think so. I think it's heavily implying that Ellis is trying to get with her.
But she's, never actually. Just because, like, Takagi's like, hey, like, that's the husband. Like,
yeah. Holly keeps him at an arm's distance. I don't think she's ever. Okay.
It's pretty interesting for me to hear, like, you guys talking about, like, the characters. Because when I watched the movie, this movie is just about, like, really strong characters, very strong acting, and very strong story. Like, there's no, like, you don't even look for other stuff. You don't look for cinematography, or you don't look for, like, technical, like, beauties, or, like, professionalism in a way. It's like it has all the cliches of, like, what American or Hollywood movie is. And I've heard a lot of stuff about, like, how this movie actually started that. Like, you get one problematic relationship, you get one strong, really, like, man character, you get sassy FBI who doesn't care about other people, like, yeah, this is not your scene anymore. Like, and I don't know, it's all of it was, like, really, it was so obvious that I was watching an American movie. Like, in every single way possible.
One.
Maybe the American movie.
And it was really enjoyable in a way that it was, like, one of the original ones, like, that, like, started that American Hollywood action movies.
Yeah.
But this is, go ahead, Alex. Go ahead.
I was going to say, it sucks you in a way. Like, usually we'll watch a movie and we'll kind of be checking our phones and, you know, talking from time to time, whatever. But this is the kind of movie you turn on and you just get sucked into it. Even though you're like talking about how, like, this is ridiculous, but you're enjoying every second of it. And the story carries scene to scene, like, the stakes keep going up, right? Like, he takes his shoes off, suddenly he's barefoot. So he's barefoot. Then there's glass on the ground. So that, like, everything builds on itself and you follow all the way through it. And it gets ridiculous, but it's also, like, the most fun you can have watching a movie.
Oh yeah. No. And this is the, so I do want to jump. Rob was asking thoughts on number two. Well, Denver Airport, we watched it last year and it's much better than I thought it was for years. I have not.
Really?
I'm interested to go back and watch two again. Cause I honestly have skipped it myself for a long time. So Rob, we'll all watch it and report back to you on that.
It's been a long time since I've seen it.
Same. I'm in the same place as you were before this rewatch, Rob. I'm still like, I watched that and it was terrible. I don't ever want to watch it again. So maybe I'll give it a rewatch.
In my head, it just repeats the formula too exactly. Like terrorists attacking a big structure. Like, is that what happens at the airport? I just remember it's an airport and there's bad guys. Like, I don't know.
And that's why I think it didn't work, because with Die Hard, they really caught lightning in a bottle, because I think, you know, there were a lot of people who got fired and hired and stuff like that right before filming. And I think the guy wrote this script in what, like 48 hours or something like that. He wrote it really, really quickly. So it feels if it didn't have all of that time for all of those cooks in the kitchen to kind of... oversaturate it. And then in the second one, it's like you have the same redheaded pain in the ass reporter who's bringing in more conflict. You have Holly and John McClane who are separated, but like she's in danger. You have the terrorist. And you still have Carl Winslow just on the phone being a supportive friend. they tried to recreate that lightning in a bottle instead of, I think, creatively trying to build on it, in my opinion, and that's why it fell so flat for me personally.
So here's something interesting. Back to Emine's original point, though, about, you know, in terms of the original feeling like kind of the quintessential American movie. So these guys get Emine. Great point. These guys get captured by German terrorists, right? They get held hostage by German terrorists. Trivia for you: who is the most German of that cast? Who is the actor who has the most German connection in that cast?
I cannot tell the name of the actor top of my head, but one of them is definitely Hans, just because of his name.
No, Hans definitely, like, Alan Rickman definitely is playing a German man.
Yeah. But he's not German.
There's an actor who has it. It is.
Who was it? Sorry.
Bruce Willis was born in Germany.
Bruce Willis is the most German person in the movie?
He is a German person on that film.
I can see that, but I cannot tell that. Yeah.
One thing we loved about these parents was, if you're talking about these guys walk in tight pants. The first parent he fights, right, up in the under construction place, who's like hunting him down. He walks in, long, flowing blonde hair. There's a shot. He looks like he's wearing yoga pants. He's got this shapely butt, and he's he looks like a male model with a machine gun. It's
tight European sweatpants in the 80s.
Very European. It's like how they make them seem European. It's like these guys are like East German. This is how you can tell.
It's the turtleneck. Yeah, it's not the sweatpants.
Well, and of course, John McClane ends up degrading or destroying those sweatpants. Can we go to pick seven, please? Pick number seven. You know, he.
I love that.
Yeah, really goes ahead. Does a number on those. he really makes a mess of that.
He said, "This is what I think of German fashion."
Yeah, right.
I don't think you're going to be able to put that in the. Oh no, we lost M&A. There you are. You're back now. I think it's an interesting time for fashion in this film. But yeah, Bruce Willis, the most German man.
I agree.
Yeah, we get this pet. Sarah, what you are laughing hysterically at the fact that Bruce Willis.
It's an interesting time for fashion. Bruce Willis is the most German person in this entire film with this fucking New Jersey accent. Oh, no.
That man is straight up born in Germany to a German mother. he is German. Bruce Willis, everybody. But speaking of people who are pretending to be German but aren't, can we play clip three for a look at our favorite villain? Clip three, please.
I thought I told all of you I want radio silence until further.
I'm very sorry, Hans. I didn't get that message.
Maybe you should have put it on the bulletin board.
Waxed Tony and Marco and his friend here. I figured you and Carl and Franco might be a little lonely.
So bloody.
How does he know so much about this?
This is very kind of you. As you are a mysterious party crasher.
Very kind of you.
Troublesome for a security guard.
Sorry, Hans. Wrong guess.
Would you like to go for double jeopardy, where the scores can really change?
Look at the confusion on his face.
He's like, amazing.
What is this?
Just watching these two guys, like, who want to make sure the other one knows they're in control, just circling each other, very intentionally memorizing all their names so he can call it out, like he knows more than he does, like trying to trick the other one into thinking they're in charge.
Let me ask you this. We're all reasonable, you know, very smart adults here. You know, is that what you do in that situation? Do you pull a John McClane
there are men with machine guns holding your wife hostage. You do not go poke the hornet's nest and like taunt them with lipstick on a sweatshirt, like, I got a machine gun, come get me. Like, no. It's very dangerous.
Sarah, how do you feel about that? Sarah, I feel like you might have a different answer there. What do you feel? What are you feeling right now?
I don't know. I'm trying to understand why the writers constructed it that way. Because why did John McClane need leverage over them? Because through his little microphone situation, he had access to Carl Winslow. You know, he tried calling the cops and they thought he was ordering a pizza or whatever. I guess he just needed some sort of leverage to get them worried, to make sure that somebody was watching them. I don't know.
So immediately takes on this mantle of like wanting to become the phantom in the wings. Like, how many of them are there? Like, create this mystery of who's coming to hunt them down. Which doesn't make any sense. Like, all he had to do is get on the microphone and be like, "Hey, I'm gonna kill one person a minute till you come out here." Like, that's true. You know,
well, and it's crazy. It's also crazy because it is such a gamble. You know, we watch this movie and we're aware that John McClane will probably win the day, but thinking of this in terms of like an actual plan, it's like you literally, the odds are so against you in this moment that unless you are like the most shrewd person in the world, which John McClane proves himself to be, this is a completely asinine plan. And you don't have a plan. Your plan is to like get, you know, like it kind of comes together.
Well, that's the thing. He never goes to where the hostages are to try to get them out.
No,
his plan is to execute these men one by one until everybody's dead. That's the plan.
Which, Emine, back to your point, is why this is one of the most American films ever created, because this man who is America comes in there without a plan. He doesn't know what the fuck he's doing. He's just like, I'm gonna, you know, like he's just quoting, you know, freaking Buck Rogers over here. Like he's the best.
You know, his nickname is Cowboy.
Cowboy. Yeah. Oh my God, it's so out of control that the fact that this man gets away with this is like pure. And like, I also love that like it takes place in like the bastion of 80s capitalism. Right, like this firm that I'm still not clear on exactly what it is that they do. Like, do you mean like what do they do in that
building? Yeah, it's like investments and building exactly.
Investments.
Wait, yeah, it's an architect, isn't it? An architecture company.
See,
Nakatomi.
Nakatomi, like partners or investments or something. They do everything.
Architect. Yeah, they got their hands in everything.
Yeah, and Takagi makes sure to bear like. Is this about our bridge project? Like, we're doing it to help the land. Like, we don't, they want, like, trying to defend the company has a gun in his head.
That's what I'm trying to say. Like, it's just the most, like, the biggest defense of, like, where America was at the time. Like, we're just doing it to help the land. It's like, you're not.
And it's also, like, Alan Rickman, like, is this kind of refined, you know, he's like, he's like a suave, articulate criminal. The whole time, up until the very end, he is no more than just annoyed that John McClane is doing this. It's not like really, really pissed off. It's like, dude, stop. Like, I'm trying to work. Like, leave me alone. John McClane's just like this mosquito.
He's more needs worried his detonator.
Yeah.
He needs his – John McClane has his detonator.
Right. Yeah. Like, just get the detonators back. I don't care if you kill him.
Well, like, that's what I want.
We brought these detonators all the way here.
And he's basically dressed like an 80s businessman. So, like, the entire movie is literally, like, this subtext of, like, like the Cold War taking place in, like, an investment firm.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? And, like, John's just, like, the American guy, like, the small town American guy caught in the middle of your, like, corporate.
The underdog.
Right, Alan Rickman's just like a rival company who's come to like destroy this company, John McClane's getting in the middle of it.
He's just like, you know, I'm America. I'm just the cop from Jersey. You know, and I'm trying to do my bit. And you're just like, what the fuck is happening? You know, it's so. And my favorite part on that topic, my favorite part is when Alan Rickman as Hans Gruber pretends that he is American. Can we go to clip 4?
I love that.
It's literally the best.
You're Clay.
Bill Clay.
Daddy use a handgun, Bill. Spent a weekend at a combat ranch. You know that game where the guns that shoot red paint? Always seems kind of stupid to you.
Oh my God.
Well, time for the real thing, Bill.
It's an acting masterclass.
Oh my God, no, the scene is brilliant.
The thing is, Alan Rickman makes it so believable.
Oh yeah, and look, I mean... Oh.
Come
Like this cigarette, he's just totally disarmed. Like, what an idiot.
Yep. And then I love that shot, just.
And maybe he's not an idiot.
Put on the gun. And give me my detonators.
He just wants the detonators.
Well. Hans, put it down now. It's pretty tricky with that accent.
Is it? TV was it really?
But what do you want with the detonators, Hans?
Did you record this on your phone, Nick?
How do you use
absolutely, 100%.
What did I? I'm going to count to three. Yeah. Like you did with Takagi.
Oops.
He didn't count to three! To see
he didn't count to three.
Fucking stupid, Hans.
I was saying.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUPS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUPS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUPSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
So crazy. So crazy.
This is the best movie ever made.
Oh, that's really so true. So Alan Rickman can do anything.
He's so good.
So good in that movie. It really is brilliant. Just the layer, like, do you know what I mean? Like, it's these two guys. I mean, it's that classic. We talk about this all the time on the podcast, Alex. The kind of the Hitchcock concept of the bomb underneath the floorboards, right? And so you have these two guys playing this scene where the conversation is about nothing. It's about, you know, the time he went to a fucking paintball ranch. Do you know what I mean? But what's underneath the scene is these two guys. Playing this game of chess, like how much do you know, how much do you not know, and both of them just executed so brilliantly. And I also, Sarah, this was Alan Rickman's first film, correct?
Pretty much, yeah.
Really?
He graduated from RADA, I think it was RADA, not that long before, and he did a whole bunch of plays. And this was like his first like big time movie, which is so incredibly cool. But just like Alan Rickman as a bad guy in action films, I think he. Like Eminem was saying before, like this movie really, really kind of created a new blueprint for the American action film. And Alan Rickman specifically just created that quintessential bad guy who's very intelligent, very suave, keeps his cool, but is just pure evil. A revelation.
Crazy. Absolutely crazy. Such a brilliant moment. Also,
we miss
I think,
Alan Rickman.
Yeah, we miss you, Alan Rickman. Also, I did get the word that YouTube shut us down momentarily for like 30 seconds.
Because we used the clip.
Because of the clip. Which is amazing that YouTube, the algorithm can recognize.
You filmed it on your phone. Like through your marbly phone. That's amazing. Well, at least it brought us back. Hi, YouTube.
It brought us back. So as we start to, you know, close out this dire discussion, favorite moments from this movie that we want to highlight. I my personal favorite, if we can go to pick three. This is one of my favorites right here.
Yeah. The way they do that, like in film school they teach you about like using candlelight, like a flame for light. And because he pops the lighter on, you have to blast him with an actual light. And it's so, if you watch for it in this scene, like it's so fake. He flips this little lighter and the whole place just lights up like the sun. It's
oh, yeah.
Beautiful. That's how it works when I turn on the lighter, Alex. I just get blasted
right.
It is with
boom.
My favorite part was
anybody else any favorite any
oops. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, yes, oh okay. My favorite part was when they're like under the blanket and walking out the building, she just slaps the newspaper guy. That's my favorite part. I was so bummed the whole time when he was like trying to get into their house and like trying to talk to children and like their helper, their housekeeper, like, oh, I'm gonna go to IRS if you don't let me in. Well, I was like so mad.
Yeah.
And that's and he gets what he deserves.
Yeah.
Oh man, I love that that the women of the conversation connect to similar moments, because I have a few favorite moments, but most of them have to do with Holly. So
exactly.
when she's brought in to speak to Hans and he's like, who put you in charge? And she's like, you did when you killed my boss. And she just goes through, she's like, we have a pregnant woman. We need to start taking people to the bathroom. What's up? You know, like love that moment. I love the part where she punches that awful, what's that guy's name again?
Ellis? Ellis?
No, the redhead who's also the bad guy in Ghostbusters. Harvey.
Harvey, yeah.
Eat it, Harvey. I love the moment where Holly sees her kids on TV and then Hans looks at the photograph, knows it's her, and he's just like, Mrs. McClain. That part's amazing. And I mean, the part where they open their version of St. Knox and the music plays and they see all of that money. It's just so fantastic. It's just so fantastic.
A lovely, lovely moment. Rob is highlighting the dropping Rickman on the stunt rig.
I mean, that's definitely one of my favorite moments for sure. It's like such a classic shot of him just falling.
Yeah.
And they did him dirty. They dropped Alan Rickman earlier than they told him they would drop him. And that was a real reaction of fear. It's such a good moment.
Yeah. Such a great moment. You know, it really is one of those times that you're just like, yeah, this is a masterful film.
Yeah.
But you know, it's Die Hard. Yeah. I mean, I in terms of the debate of whether this is a Christmas movie, there's no debate. And I will say, I will cap that by saying the screenwriter himself has said several times. You mean, I think the only person who might have said it's not, I think, is Bruce Willis. I think he said it that it's not, but like, I also don't care.
Because he's just a New York cop, all right? He doesn't know about
you. Mean, wait. You mean the German? German?
the German cop.
The German cop.
Yeah.
You know,
German cop who didn't know that Christmas existed in Japan. He was like, listen, this isn't a Christmas music.
He doesn't, what does he know? What's he know? You know, he knows as much about it as much, I'd say about as much as the guys in picture 12. Can we bring up picture 12, please?
Oh my gosh.
A classic. Oh,
look at Alex.
Was this with outside articulation? Or
yeah,
what
did
we?
Yeah, when we did the film fest. I was looking, Alex. I was looking.
The film fest. Yeah.
I was doing a deep dive for pictures of you in the holidays. You have none. You have literally none. That picture was in December, or that picture was at least.
Poor lonely Jewish boy. Yeah, I don't know.
It's all right.
Your hairstyle is just magical in that photo.
It's long. I didn't.
Yeah.
I'm already all the way down to the bottom there.
It's almost a mullet.
I could have been a German terrorist.
You could have.
I absolutely could have been a German terrorist. Just give me some spandex pants, okay?
Yep.
A machine gun and a turtleneck, and I'm in.
A tight sweatsuit.
You've always reminded me of a young James Cameron, and I've said that several times.
I'll take it.
I know you'll take it, because I feel like you also, just in personality, line up with James. You know what I mean? Yeah, there's a lot of James Cameron. Let's get that out of here. Guys, yeah, this is you know, Die Hard holiday movie, one of the best. We love it. We hope you guys love it. We hope you've had fun hanging out with us today for this.
I was gonna say, we should do one where we just watch a movie and talk over it the whole time, but YouTube would shut us down pretty damn quick.
YouTube would say, shut up. Yeah, you can say, stop that.
So we need a private live stream or something.
Exactly. Sarah and M&A, thank you so much for being here. You guys are, we obviously love you.
Thanks, more babe. Than life.
You know, so thank you for being here. And Britt, two wonderful producers, Britt and Alan, thank you for allowing us your time. And to the peeps, to everyone who came and watched, that we, again, hope you had a great time. Tweet at us at Lil Justice Pod. Listen to our new episode. We actually did a holiday movie episode that released this week. And you can find that at bpn.fm/littlejust. Oh, look at that. I love when it's on the ticker. It's so cool.
It is. You know,
it's like,
L-I-L, Justice Pod. You'll find us.
Yeah. Oh, either way, you know what I mean? We're there. But in the meantime, guys, stay safe. Have a wonderful holiday. Enjoy those leftovers. And we will talk to you soon. Thank you, everybody.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.